And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on a throwback Thursday with plenty to do over the next few hours. Coming up, more reasons why college football does not need to expand its playoff. Plus, the Gamecocks missed out on a big-time recruit last night. Maybe it's actually a good thing. Also, Christian McCaffrey is 50-50 to play this week for the Panthers. Why we have found the real Sam Darnold. Which of the recently struggling teams in the NFL do we trust to turn things around? Plus, what will change in the NFL standings from now to the end of the season? Who has the most pressure on them the rest of the way in college football? And a whole lot more. It is Thursday, so we'll catch up with Paul Charchian next hour to talk fantasy football. We'll get to our wrestling wrap-up later on this afternoon. And Lee Sterling will join us 2 hours from now to give us his picks of the week. Plenty to do over the next few hours with you till 3 on this Thursday. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Thursday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, this Friday Eve is going quite smoothly so far. How about you?
Yeah, not too bad. Got plenty to do over the next few hours. Let me start with this. Listen to smart people, because smart people have smart ideas. I know that's why you tune into the Morrow Midday Show every day. But if you follow smart people, you'll be on the right track. You can't go wrong. Smart people have smart ideas. And I think Greg Sankey is the best commissioner in college football. If there ever were to be a commissioner, just one, for the entire sport of college football, it certainly should be Sankey. He runs the SEC, the most powerful conference in college football, the best conference. There's a reason why. There's a reason why he's in charge. And all that is to build up to this. Greg Sankey was on Sirius XM talking about the potential expansion to the college football playoff. It's a bit of a long answer, but I think an important one. Let's hear from the SEC commissioner on the college football playoff.
I've been clear that I'm fine staying at four. I think one of the misnomers is that somehow there's a link to membership transition around the Southeastern Conference and a suggestion to go to 12. The way I look at 12 is if we're going to have a national championship and there's a lot of interest in providing access to conference champions, that has to be balanced against allowing in the best teams. And at 8, if you were to give 5 or 6 conference champions assured access, you limit the best teams. And if you look over time, that means a 7th or 8th ranked Michigan State, Florida, Notre Dame, Wisconsin on 2 occasions wouldn't have been in. And those teams would have had an opportunity to play for the national championship and probably a reasonable opportunity to compete at the highest level had they had that opportunity. And so I've always looked at this effort to figure out a format to say, how do you make it a national championship? How do you meet expectations of having conference champions, but also have the credibility around ensuring the best team? So what what we're talking about is the six best conference champions and six best teams. I think there's a lot of weight to that, not weight like in time, but in you know, the substance of what we've done. And so I think that that conversation is not inevitable, Mark, to bring it back to your question. The result is not inevitable, but I think it's a substantive recommendation that merits consideration. And if there's discomfort with that approach, our conference is fully comfortable staying with the four best teams. I can't be more clear than that. But we think we have an obligation to build this sport nationally, and we'll sacrifice a little bit of what we've experienced to bring people in. And I look forward to other healthy dialogue where there's a give and take and can produce the right outcome for college football.
Greg Sankey on SiriusXM talking about the playoff picture and potential expansion for college football. I love that line at the end. That's a bit of a jab. Right? Oh, well, you know, we'll be willing to make a sacrifice for everyone else's sake. Right? That's like just wielding your power around. Because the SEC, they don't need to expand the playoff. What that comment is saying, we'll make a sacrifice, that's saying we don't need to do this. But if you guys think that we need to move to 12 teams to help you out, if that's what you need to be able to compete, all right, we'll make that sacrifice. We'll help you out. Right, because we're so dominant, you need something. You need some sort of help. That's what I get from that line. All right, well, we're all in on four teams. But if you really want to go to 12, all right, we'll make that sacrifice for you to help you out. And be careful what you wish for, because the SEC benefits either way. Not a lot of things can you extrapolate cleanly. You know, like just because your kid's growing at a young age, and he's I don't have kids, so I don't know what the average height is of certain ages. But just because he's, 5 feet by sixth grade, I don't know if that's normal. I don't remember how tall I was. Doesn't mean he's going to be 15 feet by the time he graduates, right? That's not how it works. Eventually, you taper off. You stop growing. But for the SEC, they control a 14 playoff, and if you were to move that to a 12-team playoff, well, they would control that as well. Just like they normally get two out of the four teams in this current playoff format, they wouldn't get six out of 12, but they'd probably get four. Right, so the percentages may go down, but they would still fill up that playoff bracket and benefit the most. So if you're Sankey, sure, you could take it or leave it. You don't care either way. You want to move to 12? All right, we'll put more teams in. You want to keep it at four? Okay, we'll continue to win all the national championships. Whatever you want. We'll make that sacrifice for you because we don't need to do it. You guys need the help. I love that line from somebody who knows they're in that position and can just throw that around. I mean, take a little jab at the other conferences. All right, if you really need to go to 12, because, I mean, we're fine. We're operating highly with just four playoff teams. But I'll continue to say that we don't need any more playoff teams. You know, when it was the BCS and we only got two teams and you just put them into the championship, there were cases in which you felt like, yeah, you know what? There are a couple of teams being left out. We need more than two teams. You need a little bit of a buffer just to make sure you get it right. Instead of just two, sometimes there was a third team that was just as good and they didn't get a chance. So we've gone to four teams. Has there ever been a season where you look at these four teams and say, ah, you know what? That fifth team, they really could have won a national championship. Four is the perfect number for college football. And I say this all the time in my defense of the four-team playoff. Have we ever had a year in which we crowned the wrong team a champion? It may happen in other sports. March Madness, the best team doesn't always win the national championship. Maybe just the hottest or the team that had the easiest path. Sometimes you see it in baseball or even the NFL. Like the Giants, they were the best team when they won those Super Bowls that time of year, no doubt. But there was no other point during that season where they were the best team. College football, we never come away with a team that's like, well, that was kind of fluky. If they replayed that season, I don't think they'd win the championship again. No, we have always felt good about our champions. Since we've gone to four, we've never needed to expand. And this year is just another great example. If I asked you today, as you drive around right now, you're sitting at your desk or whatever it may be you're doing, if I asked you to pick four playoff teams today, who would be in your playoff field right now in college football? And then I ask you, okay, give me 12 playoff teams. Which one do you think would be more difficult? Because I could tell you my answer. I think it would be more difficult to pick 12 playoff teams, 12 teams that are deserving to be there instead of four. I think it's easier to pick the four teams. And you may say, well, of course, fewer decisions to make. You only have to make four choices instead of 12. We don't like to make choices. You don't like to, if you had to make 12 choices in a day, I mean, you make all sorts of minor choices. But if you're in a marriage and your wife asks you your decision, most of us, we don't like to make these decisions. We don't like to make choices. Well, what do you want to do? Whatever you want. What do you want to eat? I could go for anything. What do you want? We don't like to make choices. So it could be easier to make only four instead of 12. But imagine you're putting together a party. Maybe you're a kid and your parents are throwing you a birthday party, and they say, invite 12 of your friends. And you say, 12? Oh, I don't have 12 people to invite. I got to come up with 12 people to fill these 12 spots for the party? I don't know. Or if you get nowadays, and as an adult, you get invited to a game, and for some reason they have 12 tickets. You win some sort of trip to a game, and you have your own little luxury box. You could bring 12 people, and you think, I got to bring 12 people? That's hard to find. I don't really know 12 people I'd want to go to a game with. But if they said, okay, you won this trip to this game, you can bring 4 people. You say, oh, that's a little bit easier. I can make those decisions. If your parents say, we're going to throw you a party for you and 4, or in this case, I guess, 3 of your other best friends. We'll take you to Chuck E. Cheese. Oh, okay, yeah, I know my 3 best buddies that I want to go to Chuck E. Cheese with. If they say you have to take 11 other friends, it's like, ooh, I don't know. Now you're just kind of forcing me to take people just to fill those spots. I don't really have 11 best friends I want to go to Chuck E. Cheese with. All right, 12 guests, a little difficult. 4 guests, yeah, I can do that. And if you come away realizing it's easier to pick 4 teams than it is 12, then that's what you should do. Because when you look at college football this year, it's the same way. Georgia clearly would be in the playoff today. Iowa as well. The way college football has gone, I would put Cincinnati in there. And then that 4th team today, probably Oklahoma. I mean, they're the only other team that's undefeated there in the top 7. After that, you have Alabama, Ohio State, Penn State. They've all lost. If you want to have a debate for that 4th team and you say, well, Alabama's a better team, okay, that's fine. You want to put Alabama in. But I think you could come up with the top 4 a lot easier than the 12. I think you would sit down and spend more time having to come up with the 12 teams. Is Oklahoma State a playoff team this year? What about Ole Miss? And Michigan State? You would have much tougher decisions. Not only that, but when you look at the 12 teams, Sports Illustrated put out what would be a 12-team bracket this year, and it includes Georgia, Iowa, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, and then you have Michigan and Kentucky and Penn State and Wake Forest and Michigan State, Oregon, Alabama, Ohio State. The first takeaway, dominated by the Big Ten, they would have 5 playoff teams, which leads me to the second takeaway. These teams just cannibalize themselves. They still have to play one another. Michigan and Michigan State still have to play each other. Michigan still has to play Ohio State. Penn State still has to play some of these teams. Iowa will play one of them in the Big Ten Championship. Right, Kentucky's on this list. Well, they play Georgia this week, so one of those teams is going to lose. And then you have Georgia and Alabama both in this bracket. Well, they're probably going to play in the SEC title game. Well, one of those teams is going to have to lose again there. And so on and so forth. Right, I could keep going, spinning this spider web. These teams still all have to play one another. So right now it may look pretty good, like, oh, yeah, it's a pretty good 12-team field. Got 4 undefeated teams in the Big Ten. You should put them all in the playoff. Yeah, because they haven't played each other yet. They're all going to beat up on one another. And by the time we get to the end of the season, these teams will all have at least 1 loss, if not 2. And right now, when you look at those 12 teams, right, who is the 12th best team? As of now, it's Oklahoma State. Do we really think Oklahoma State could win a national championship? Oklahoma State, by the way, they have to play Texas this week. Then they have to play Iowa State. They still have to play Oklahoma. I mean, there's a good chance they end the season with 3 losses. And right now, we'd be talking about them as a playoff team. You don't need 12 teams in the playoff. These teams will all beat up on one another. And by season's end, especially this year, with how chaotic it's been, by season's end, when we look at the 12th best team in college football, it could be a team with 3 losses. Do we really need to take a team with 3 losses in the playoff? We've never had a team with 2 losses go to the playoff. It's always been the most elite of playoff teams. And that's how you find a true national champion. Not by taking Oklahoma State with 2 losses in a lousy Big 12, just, well, they're the 12th best team. When is the 12th best ever quite the accomplishment, even in the field of college football? Like, congratulations, you're the 12th best. Oh, okay. Do we give awards away for the 12th best? Do you hang that on the fridge? Nobody cares about the 12th best. You only need 4 teams. And Greg Sankey reiterated on SiriusXM, yeah, the SEC, we're good with 4. Now, of course, they dominate 4, but smart people make smart choices. Greg Sankey is the best commissioner in college football, and he understands, well, we don't need to expand. 4 teams is just fine for college football. Let me shift to this. The Gamecocks missed out on a big-time recruit last night. Oscar Delp, a tight end from Georgia, decided to stay home. He picked Georgia last night. It came down to 4 schools. He had 4 hats on the table: Michigan, Clemson, South Carolina, and Georgia. But the belief was that it really was coming down to 2 schools, either Georgia or South Carolina. And he called Shane Beamer and told Beamer the day before. He made this announcement last night. He called Beamer on Tuesday and told him he was not going to choose the Gamecocks. But it was believed to come down to those 2 schools. And Delp was the number 2 tight end in the country. Would have been a big get for South Carolina. His mother went to South Carolina. His grandparents live in the Columbia area. He's from Georgia. He grew up in Georgia, so that's the hometown team. And his uncle played at Clemson, so he had all sorts of different connections to all the different schools. And he's supposed to be a big-time recruit, and just the fact that South Carolina came down to the very end, it's a bit of a moral victory for Shane Beamer, that they competed with Georgia there to the very end. Came down to South Carolina and Georgia. Because you look at those two programs, Georgia is the number one team in the country right now. South Carolina can't get within 20 points of Tennessee. So to be in the race with one another, even though you didn't get that player, you come away feeling pretty good if you're Shane Beamer. You feel pretty good about your sales pitch that you were able to compete with a team that may win the national championship this year. And in the end, that may have been the deciding factor. Delp said yesterday, the more I watched Georgia this season, the more it solidified my decision. Yeah, no surprise, because they're the best team in college football. And that's what winning does. Now, you watch Georgia, and that defense, and the way that they win, and the way they play, and how dominant they've been, and they're the number one team, and Alabama just lost this past week, and Georgia rolled, and he said, oh, yep, that's the school I want to go to. And that's the best team in the country. They got the quarterback right now, at least when healthy, in JT Daniels. They believe to have the quarterback of the future as well in the program already. That's the place to go for a tight end. But maybe, and you could call this a hot take, maybe it was good that South Carolina missed out on Delp. Is he one of the best tight end recruits in the country? Yes. Would have done a lot for the Gamecocks' rankings, or even just a great moral victory in the recruiting game to bring in this kid? Sure. But when giving his takeaway from each of those four schools, here's what Delp had to say. In regards to Clemson, he said, I have a great relationship with the coaching staff there, and it's a winning atmosphere, and they know how to win games and have a winning culture. All right, pretty good. When it came to Georgia, he said, the defense stands out. Going against them every day in practice is going to constantly make you better and develop you into a better player. When he was asked about South Carolina, he said, the opportunity there is insane. I think I have a great opportunity coming there as a freshman and make a lot of catches and make a lot of plays. When asked about Michigan, he said the academics of the school are second to none, and they're always putting tight ends in the NFL. They know how to develop tight ends as well. All right, what do you pick up on? The only team he really talked about was Clemson with the atmosphere and a winning culture. Otherwise, for South Carolina, it was, hey, I could come in as a freshman, make a lot of plays. I could come in as a freshman, I could make a lot of plays. When it came to Georgia, he said going up against that defense will make me better. It will develop me into a better player. When asked about Michigan, well, they put a lot of tight ends in the NFL. They know how to develop tight ends. I'm a tight end. I want to play in the NFL. That's a good spot. And overall, just his take was, I just want to watch the games. This was about his recruiting process. I just want to watch the games, see it in person, and see where I think I get a best and who's going to develop me the best and get me to the next level. A lot of I's, a lot of me's. And if I'm the Gamecocks and I'm trying to build a culture in year one, I don't know if I want I and me guys coming in, as talented as they may be. You don't want to turn down talent. You can never have enough talent in your program. But when you're trying to build a culture that always gets referenced about Clemson, when you're trying to build something, look, it's the knock on Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma. No, he's not playing well enough on the field, but he's been described as an I and a me guy. Go watch the documentary from high school. Go watch the fact that he left the field as they were celebrating Saturday to go into the locker room. Didn't celebrate with his teammates. That's been the knock on him. That's not the way to build some sort of winning culture. And I don't know Delp. He's just an 18-year-old. I don't want to knock the kid, but when I read these quotes about the schools or what he was looking at, a lot of I, a lot of me. Who can turn me into the best player? Who can get me to the next level? Where am I going to fit in best? But what about the fit for the actual programs? What I would want to hear is more about the program. And the only quote he really gave, again, was about Clemson. In that Clemson quote, he didn't really say much about himself. Instead, he talked about the winning culture that they have, the coaching staff, the atmosphere they have built, how they're able to win. That's what I would want to hear about all my programs. That's why I would want you to come play for me, not just because it's best for you. And you know what? That's probably recruiting. Kids have to look out for themselves. They have to find the best spot for themselves. But if you ever interview somebody for a job and they just talk about me, right? Well, this would be a great opportunity for me, and oh, this would be a lot of money for me, and they don't talk about what they can bring to the company, wouldn't you be sitting there as the boss like, yeah, you know, I don't know if this is going to be a good fit. Seems like this person is really just about themselves, not about the company. I'm trying to bring them in and help out. And well, you know, I love the hours for myself. I could have more of a social life and talk about themselves the whole time. It's like, yeah, well, what about the company? Why do you think this is a good fit here? Why do you think you could work well here at this company? Well, you know, I'll make a lot more money. You guys are going to boost my career. Okay, but what about the actual company? What do you like about being here other than how much it's going to help you? Those would be my concerns. I'm sure a talented player will probably have a great career at Georgia, but if I'm South Carolina and I'm trying to build something early on with Shane Beamer, I don't know if those quotes fit in. Coming up, Christian McCaffrey may return this weekend for the Panthers. They could certainly use him. In the meantime, I think we have found out that this is who Sam Darnold is. And we'll get to that next. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Thursday.
What's today?
It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, Panthers. We'll wait to see if Christian McCaffrey can return on Sunday. In the meantime, we may have found out who or what Sam Darnold really is. Get to that here on the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. The Mara Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They've been in business for over 100 years. They're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S., and Baker Roofing provides residential and commercial roofing. In 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. Start of the show talking about potential playoff expansion. This will continue to be a topic in college football for years to come because the earliest this expansion may happen is still like 3 years from now. And until we get to that point or until we actually do expand, we'll continue to talk about it. Will they? Won't they? Should they? Should they not? We'll get everybody's opinion. They'll continue to talk it out. But we heard from Greg Sankey about where he stands as the commissioner of the SEC. And as I laid out, I think this is another year proving in which you don't need to expand the playoff. About 2 weeks ago, I compared it to Chris Farley's character in Billy Madison, where he's talking about Veronica Vaughn, and he keeps going on, and they're all untrue, which is kind of like all the things we say about why we need an expanded playoff, and then year after year, we kind of disprove those things. And this year's showing, like, yeah, there really aren't five great teams. Everybody's losing. It's a chaotic season. Do we really need five spots in the playoff? And then you say, well, what about the little teams? Okay, well, Cincinnati right now would be in the playoff, so that's not a fair excuse anymore either. I don't want to hear we need to expand the playoff to give the group of five a chance because Cincinnati would be in the 14 playoff this year as of now. They control their own destiny, it seems. But as I said, it can be easier to make four choices than 12 choices because we don't like to make choices. Here's my little life hack moving away from college football. Because so often, I'm sure one of the biggest issues I know in my life, in my relationships, one of the biggest issues was always trying to choose where you want to eat. You come home from work. You say, you hungry? You want to go grab something to eat? Okay, where do you want to go? I don't know. What do you want? I could go for anything. What are you in the mood for? Nothing in particular. And you go on. You go back and forth. You want to get Chinese? I don't really want Chinese. Okay, well, what about pizza? Well, you said you could go for anything. And then you sit there and you spend that. It's like going through Netflix trying to watch something, trying to find something to watch. And you spend a half hour going through all the options. You want to watch this? Maybe not. Well, you said you weren't very picky, but you don't want to watch this movie? You know what you don't want to watch. You know what you don't want to eat, but you don't know what you want to eat. So here's the little trick. Here's the life hack. Try this out next time you have to come up with a place to go eat. You come home from work, let's say, in this hypothetical situation, and you and your wife, your girlfriend, husband, whoever, you're going out to eat that night, and it's on you to kind of make the plans. You come home, and you say to your significant other, you want to go out to eat? And they say, oh, where are we going? And you say, guess, where do you think we're going? And if they give you a guess, you say, yep, that's it. That's where we're going. And that way you make them make the choice. Now, they could not play along and say, I don't know, why don't you tell me where we're going? I couldn't guess. I have no idea. Where are we going to go eat? but you have to keep pushing the issue. No, you guess. Where do you think we're going to go out to eat tonight? Where do you think I'm going to take you? Oh, that new Mexican place. How'd you know? Yes, we're going to that new Mexican place. And there you go. When you don't want to make the choice, when you can't make a decision, you force the other person to with that little trick. You have them guess, and then that just becomes the place you go. You're welcome. Thank me later. When it comes to the Carolina Panthers, reports are Christian McCaffrey is 50-50 to play on Sunday. It's a game-time decision. Now, the Panthers are at home against my Minnesota Vikings. Big game on Sunday. And I was surprised to see that the Vikings are actually favored on the road. Now, only favored by one, so almost a pick, but they are the road team, right? So on a neutral site, that means they'd be favored by four. So Vegas still prefers the Vikings over the Panthers with the way Carolina has played the last couple of weeks. Christian McCaffrey could have an influence on that. And I think, as I've been saying, since McCaffrey got injured, it's important, obviously, for the Panthers, but especially for Sam Darnold to get him back on the field. He'll be a game-time decision. Matt Rhule said yesterday, 50-50. We'll see. We'll find out on Sunday. We'll see if they get him back out there. But it's important for Sam Darnold to have that help in the backfield. Sam Darnold, when he was with the Jets, had a quarterback rating of 78. He comes to Carolina, first three games with Christian McCaffrey, a quarterback rating of 99, which would put him towards the top of the league. Without Christian McCaffrey, the last two games, a quarterback rating of just 66. No interceptions in the first three games, or rather just one interception first three games, five interceptions the last two without McCaffrey. Total it up, he's at 85 as a quarterback rating with the Panthers. And Carolina right now, they've dropped to the seventh worst offense by DVOA ranking. I think we have seen, though, what Sam Darnold is. His capabilities, his ceiling, his limit. Bucky Brooks always talk about quarterbacks and how you're either a truck or a trailer. If you're the truck, you're pulling the team to victory. If you're a trailer, you need some help to pull you to a victory. That's Sam Darnold. He is not a truck. And when he tries to be a truck, like the last 2 weeks, throwing costly interceptions in the second half, that's what happens. When he can be a trailer and you can hand it off to Christian McCaffrey and you can play complimentary football and you can help out the defense that way and the offensive line doesn't have to pass block so much, then he can help lead you to victory. They were 3-0 with Christian McCaffrey, 0-2 the last two weeks without him. But I think we've seen what Darnold is. I don't think he is as good as he looked the first 3 weeks. I don't think he's as bad as he's looked the last 2 weeks. I think he's somewhere in the middle, which actually does put him with his New York Jets career. He posted a 99 quarterback rating those first three games, a 66 the last two. It equals an 85. That's pretty good. And I think that's what you get with Darnold. You'll get some good, you'll get some bad, and in the end, he'll kind of be in the middle. Not quite as good as what we saw the first 3 weeks. I mean, he really played like a top quarterback. Not quite as bad as the last 2 weeks where he looks like he doesn't really belong. But he's somewhere in the middle. You know, back in school, you used to have those different terms in math class. You'd have like the mean, the median, the mode, the range. Isn't there one when you take away the best and the worst? Isn't that a thing? But I think it's also a good way to look at a set of data. You know, like if you're a realtor, you could have a really good year. You were fortunate enough to sell a mansion. You have a great year. Best year you've had. Yeah, because you were able to sell a mansion. You have a really bad year. There's a recession. There's the bubble burst. There's a housing crisis, whatever it is. Bad year to sell houses. Or you got sick, something going on with the family. You just didn't sell a lot of houses that year. Well, neither one really indicates what you can do as a realtor. Wipe out your best year, wipe out your worst year, and that's how you get a true look at what that person is as a professional. Same with Sam Darnold. Right, the first two games, or rather three games, really the three best game stretch of his career. The last two games, pretty poor. He's somewhere in the middle. Wipe out the best, wipe out the worst, you get Sam Darnold. And we'll see what that is moving forward. I think it's good enough to get you to the playoffs. I don't think it's good enough to do a whole lot once you get there. But Sam Darnold is certainly a capable quarterback when he has the help around him. And that's why you have to try to get Christian McCaffrey back as soon as you can. You don't want to rush him. Somebody that has dealt with those health issues in recent years and the money that you have tied into him, it's more important to make sure he's healthy and good to go when he actually does come back. But that is a huge support system for Sam Darnold. All right, that's the whole idea of a relationship. You get into a relationship, it's supposed to make it easier. You get married, you think like, wow, this is so much easier. And that, as they say, behind every great man is a great woman. They help you accomplish even more things in life. And then maybe at a certain point you get divorced and you're back on your own. What do you have to do? You have to figure out like how to do the laundry again. You haven't had to do laundry in years. Now you have to figure out how to cook for yourself. You never had to cook. You have to get back on the dating scene. It's so foreign. And you haven't had to date in 20 years. That's kind of Sam Darnold. He found Christian McCaffrey. That relationship was blossoming. It made everything easier for him. And now with McCaffrey injured, it's like getting divorced. Like, oh, now he's got to figure out how to cook. And he's, yeah, I kind of remember this from back in the day, which in his case is with the Jets. Yeah, I kind of remember what this was like, having to try to do more on my own, make more take more chances, play from behind. You have to figure out how to do the laundry again. You have to become civilized a little more once again on your own. That's Sam Darnold. And he will really benefit from the return of Christian McCaffrey, whether it's this week or next. I hope for my sake, as a Vikings fan, I'll be honest with you, I hope McCaffrey doesn't return this week. I hope Darnold continues to struggle. Let's push it off a week. Right, Carolina, let's push this turnaround. You want to get back in the win column. You want to start playing better football. How about we wait till next week? McCaffrey, he looks like he could use another week. Let him rest this week. Bring him back next week. It's okay. We'll see what happens on Sunday. Coming up, speaking of those Panthers, when you look at the NFL and the teams that got off to a hot start and then struggled the last couple of weeks, who do we trust the most to turn it around? Because even though we're only 5 weeks into the NFL season, it already feels like we've had these ups and downs. The Panthers win three straight. You're feeling good. Talking about Sam Darnold as a Pro Bowler. They've lost the last two tough losses. Now you're coming away thinking like, oh, yeah, no, the Panthers, that was flukish. They're not a very good team. And just like I was saying with Darnold, the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle. So which one of these teams already 5 weeks in that have had some ups and downs this early on, which one do we trust the most to steady the ship moving forward? We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Maher Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Day Show on ESPN Radio.
I couldn't sleep at all last night, just thinking of you, babe.
Coming up, which NFL team do we trust the most to steady things back on track here the rest of the way this season? Get to that here on the Maher Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. There's that one commercial I just played during the break now. For I think it's the Tiger Tales. John Blau does a great job covering the Clemson Tigers, and he's a friend of the show. He's been on multiple times. He does a great job. But that, I hear that commercial. You know, I like to try to be a little high energy here on the radio, get you going. I hear that commercial. I don't know if that's selling things. But John does a great job there covering Clemson. Hey, when you look at the NFL, it's interesting. We're already 5 games into the season. We're only 5 games into the season, yet teams have already had some ups and downs. Right, so like the Carolina Panthers are the most obvious example right here in our backyard, maybe the team you follow closest. They won three straight, then they lost two straight. And let me use one of the show cliches again. As Denny Green always used to say, how you feel about your record depends on when the losses were and when the wins were. The Panthers are 3-2, but you're coming off back-to-back losses. Darnold hasn't looked all that great. McCaffrey's injured. You're probably not feeling as good about your 3-2 record as, say, the Bears, who have won their last two games to get to 3-2. I think the Panthers are a better team. I think the Panthers have looked better this year. But the Bears, both teams have the same record. The Bears are moving up. The Panthers right now are going down. The Bears have won two in a row with a rookie quarterback. The Panthers have lost two in a row with their quarterback not looking so good. So how you feel about your record really depends on when the wins were and when the losses were. So the Panthers won three in a row, then dropped the next two. They're 3-2. And as I mentioned, they're a home dog on Sunday against a Vikings team that is better than their record would indicate. Then you have, in the same boat, the Las Vegas Raiders. Won their first three games, have lost their last two, and factor in the whole John Gruden situation there. You just lost your head coach in the middle of a season. That is never easy. I'd have to go back and look. Has there been an interim coach? Off the top of my head, maybe I'm missing an obvious one. Has there been an interim coach that has led a team to a playoff? I don't think so. Not that I can remember off the top of my head. You can let me know. I'm going to have to look this up. I just thought about it now. But the Denver Broncos are another team in that same division. They won their first three games. We're looking good. Great defense. They've lost their last two. Lost by 16 at home to the Ravens and then lost by 8 this past week to the Steelers, where Pittsburgh woke up. The Steelers' offense was struggling. They dropped 27 points on that Broncos defense. And Denver is now 3-2. Those three teams are all in the same boat. Started hot, then struggled. Who do you trust the most to turn this thing around? As I was talking last segment about Sam Darnold, the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle. Just like, you know, there's always three stories to every tale, or three perspectives, right? There's always yours, theirs, and then the truth is probably in the middle. You have your perspective, they have their perspective of the situation, and what really happened is probably in between the two. Same idea here. Panthers probably are not as good as the first 3 weeks, same with the Raiders, Broncos, but they're also probably not as bad as the last 2 weeks, I would like to think, for all three teams. So who do you trust the most? Well, going team by team, the Raiders, after that 3-0 start, they've dropped the last two. They have a negative point differential, unlike the other two teams. So statistically speaking, the Raiders have actually played the worst of those three teams that I put in this same category. I mean, they lost to the Bears at home, and Justin Fields, bad loss. They just snuck by the Dolphins. They beat a Steelers team that's struggling. And now, with this John Gruden storyline, I don't think that helps matters. Look at this past Sunday. The two teams that were dealing with issues from their coaches. The Raiders, typically a good offense, scored only 9 points at home on Sunday, lost by double digits to a rookie quarterback. That was before Gruden was let go, or he resigned, I should say. But there were still issues. I mean, it was still a storyline. And the other team, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Urban Meyer, that was their first game since that whole fiasco. They came out at home with extra time to prepare, still lost by 20 to the Titans. Neither team played well. Coaches always preach to the players, don't become a distraction. What about when the coach does? What about when the coach becomes a distraction? It provides more chaos in that locker room. Neither of those teams responded well. Now, fast forward a couple of days, in the case of the Raiders, now forget just dealing with that issue. Now you still have to deal with it, and your coach is gone. And the interim coach has never been a coach before. I know he's coached here in the state, and he's been brought up before about trying to get the South Carolina job, and that's been available. Longtime special teams guy, worked with Gruden in Tampa, has never been a head coach. So now you have not only an interim coach, but someone who's never done it before, trying to figure this out in a tough division for both them and the Broncos. You have to deal with the Chargers, and the Chiefs are probably the best last place team in the league. Which takes me to the Denver Broncos. Good defense, but I don't trust Teddy Bridgewater. If you're a Panthers fan, you saw him last year, you shouldn't trust him either. And they have beaten the Giants, the Jaguars, the Jets. Three teams that have a combined 2 wins. And then they lost to the Ravens and the Steelers, 2 playoff teams from a year ago. Lost to them both by multiple scores. I think that is a truer indication of what the Broncos are. Teddy Bridgewater will get you some wins, not enough. Then we turn to the Carolina Panthers, who we've already been talking about this afternoon, more specifically Sam Darnold. And the Panthers, 3-2. But again, as I've been saying for 2 weeks, or really since they brought in Sam Darnold, he needs that help around him. And you can look at that 3-2 start for the Panthers and directly correlate it to Christian McCaffrey. For the Broncos, you know, Teddy Bridgewater had to come out of one of those games, missed a half, right, against Ravens in one of their losses. For the Raiders, yeah, you had the Gruden story for one of the losses. But for the Panthers, they were 3-0, McCaffrey gets injured, and then they lose their next two. Direct correlation. So I do trust the Panthers the most to turn things around once they get McCaffrey back, assuming this is not going to become some sort of long-term issue, or it's not going to linger all year. He's not going to be 100% or close to it for the rest of the season. If you get McCaffrey back healthy, I do think the Panthers will be just fine, and they'll look more like that team early in the season. They are the second-best team in that division. I think they still have a winning season, and I trust them more than I do the Raiders or the Broncos. Elsewhere, when you look at other teams in the NFL, it's interesting. All right, what about 3-2 teams that didn't necessarily have the up and then the down? Like the Bengals and the Browns, both 3-2, each coming off a loss. The Titans, 3-2. We just covered the Raiders and the Broncos. Moving elsewhere, the Bears are 3-2. Outside of the Panthers, you also have the Saints in that division that are 3-2. So you have a lot of those teams that are right around 500, 3-2, and you could go either direction. I've said before on the show earlier this week, in fact, yesterday, I'm still not as high in the Bengals. They've looked good this year, better than I thought. Sunday was a good loss, if there's ever such a thing, against the Packers. But I still can't see them becoming a playoff team by year's end. I think they'll be competitive. I think they'll hang in there in the race. But I don't think they win the AFC North or challenge for it. I think they start to slip a little bit. The Ravens are better. I still think the Browns are better. The Steelers are a tough out. The Browns have too much talent to have a down year, even with Baker Mayfield, I think they'll be just fine. Not a big fan of the Titans, who are 3-2, but that division is so poor, they should be fine as well. And in the NFC, those 3-2 teams I mentioned, the Bears, don't be fooled by the last couple of wins. They've been outscored this year. I'm still not sold on Justin Fields. The defense played well on Sunday against the Raiders, but to me, it's still not a top-notch defense. The Bears are 3-2. I still think they're the third best team in that division, much like the Saints, who are 3-2. The Saints are a hard team to figure out because the Saints, they play great. It's been one good, one bad. Play great against the Packers, blown out against the Panthers. Play really well in New England, and then lose to the Giants at home. And then play really well at Washington. Now they have to go to Seattle. They're fortunate Russell Wilson's not playing. Let's see how the Saints do on the road against Geno Smith in Seattle. That should be a good win. Then they get the Buccaneers after that. How will they stack up to the Super Bowl champs? The Saints are a hard team to predict, but I continue to stick with my preseason prediction of a third-place finish and a record right around 500. Of the 3-2 teams in general, I still trust the Browns the most because of all that talent on paper. They were a playoff team a year ago. They have a good team on both sides of the football, smart coach. Their quarterback will limit them, but he can at least get them to the postseason. When we come back, we'll wrap up hour one. Speaking of the Panthers, somebody got themselves in a little bit of trouble at the Panthers game on Sunday, and it wasn't one of the players. In fact, it was somebody from around these parts. We'll get to that next. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
I'm doing great, but I'm hoping you could call me Boca Baby.
Great show. You're doing a good job.
You're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear. We like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays, where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Dawson that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Come on, come on, come on, now touch me, baby. Can't you see that I am not afraid? What was that promise that you made? Why won't you tell me what she said? What was that promise that you made?
Wrapping up hour one here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Great song from The Doors on a throwback Thursday. I just saw a trailer yesterday. I didn't know this was a thing. But then I saw online big-time Beatles fans were talking about a year ago. They're coming out with a 3-part documentary, I think next month, on the Beatles. Footage that has never been seen before from 50 years ago when they're recording, I think it's Abbey Road. And then it leads to the rooftop concert that they do. They put out like a 4-minute trailer yesterday. Really interesting. And you see them in the recording studio and they're talking. You see them go through their process. And they had 3 weeks to put this album together. And they were talking, hey, we do our best work when we're under pressure. And the way that they put these songs together and then how the whole rooftop. Looks really good. 3-part documentary.
That would have been the Let It Be album.
Was it Let It Be?
Yes.
There was like that's why I was confused, because there was a combination of the two. They were working on something, which I've always said is probably my favorite Beatles song, the demo version of George Harrison. Then the Beatles got their hands on it. And they overproduce that song. But something, look it up on YouTube. When it's just George and his guitar, it's a beautiful song. That was on the Let It Be, right? But then they were also doing songs that ended up on Abbey Road. So I have no idea. I don't know. But they were putting an A album together, and they were getting ready for the rooftop concert, and it looks really cool. And it's going to be on Disney Plus, which I was surprised. Like, why is this coming to Disney Plus? But they got the rights to the thing. So check that out if you're a Beatles fan or an old school music fan. Comes out, I think, next month. I just saw the trailer yesterday. I didn't know this was a thing. Three-part documentary. Looks really cool. And what I'm always amazed by is how they can color, like, black and white footage. That's really cool to me, too. And then I fell down a whole rabbit hole. How do they do that? And I guess they just make up the colors if they don't know what they, you know, because I always thought, like, if you color a film from the 40s, how do you know what colors they were actually wearing? And at least what I read online, they just make up, you know, they just make up the colors themselves. Like, oh, that would look good as a green. Let's make that green. So then I wasn't as impressed, but that's still pretty cool. Anyways, we've been talking about the Carolina Panthers throughout this hour. The Panthers played the Eagles this past week. It was a tough loss for the Panthers at home. But I saw TMZ had this video where a guy and a girl were having a little too much fun, apparently, in a bathroom stall at the game. And a bunch of people were recording it, and the door was closed. You don't know what's going on, but you can use your imagination. And the cops show up to do something about it. They ended up not getting arrested. They cuffed them. They took them out, but they didn't end up arresting them or anything, and they just got kicked out of the game. But it is so awkward. These two, they're doing whatever they're doing behind the door. People are, like, cheering them on and recording, and the cops are just standing outside the stall door because they don't want to, like, kick it in, and they're just waiting. And it's the most awkward, like, uncomfortable and somewhat funny video. You can find it on TikTok or YouTube or TMZ had it, wherever you want, from the game this past Sunday of these two, apparently, right, getting busy in a bathroom stall in an NFL game. Nothing says romance like the Panthers blowing a 15-point lead in a soaked bathroom floor at the stadium. But the reason why I brought it up, because apparently the guy involved in the video, according to the rumors online, is from right here in Charleston. In fact, he may even be a first responder in Charleston. He was having a good time at the game Sunday for the Panthers in their loss against the Eagles. That Eagles comeback was just so exciting, it just had to get you going. Hour two coming up next. What's going to change in the NFL from now to the end of the season? We'll get to that next.